Take from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
John Trumbull, happy birthday, bud.
Oh, thank you, Darren. Yeah, thank you. We're actually recording this on the day after my birthday, but this is the day I'm mostly celebrating because I had to work yesterday. So, thank you.
No problem. How do you celebrate a birthday during the end times? What did you do? Did you make yourself a birthday cake out of rations, or like how does that work?
That is the question. When I went shopping a little earlier this week, I decided to stop by one of my local stores, and I got myself a little Petridge Farm refrigerated cake, and I had a little of that last night. So that was my little birthday celebration. I was like, I want some birthday cake this year. I don't usually do a birthday cake thing for myself, but I decided that. And I think I might indulge myself with a trip out to one of my local steakhouses and have, because I think they're serving outside, so I think I can get away with that. And I think I'm going to treat myself to a nice steak.
Oh, fancy times. Yeah, dude, there's nothing. I mean, I don't know if any of our listeners are, you know, carnivores like us, or they're vegan or whatever, but yeah, there's nothing quite like a good birthday steak. I enjoy it on many occasions whenever I can.
Yeah. I don't indulge myself with that too much these days, but yeah, it is a fun thing to do for special occasions. And if you're a vegetarian or a vegan or whatever like that, and if you do it for moral or health reasons, I can totally respect that. But for me, bottom line, I just like eating meat too much, man.
It's delicious. Bite into that cow.
Yeah. That's just I don't see that's ever being something I could give up.
No, it is what it is, man. Hey.
But that's me. That is me.
You live your truth.
I am living my truth. So I was gonna do that last night, but when I got home from work, I was just like, I think I'm just too tired. I think I'm just gonna take it easy. So I just, you know, talked to my mom on the phone a bit, talked to my buddy Lawson, who's down in North Carolina, had a nice conversation with him. And that was, you know, just a fun low-key evening.
Well, far out, man. That sounds pretty great.
Yeah. What about you? How's your weekend going, sir?
Weekend's good. You know, just kind of spending a lot of, you know, time indoors, of course. Like, I'm still trying to sort of learn a skill. I'm still trying to figure out how to play the guitar, as it were.
Oh, yeah. How's that going? We haven't heard about that in a while. Give us an update.
Update. It's getting there. It's a little tricky, just because I kind of have like fat, stubby fingers, and anybody that plays a guitar knows if you got like kind of fat, chubby fingers, it's a little bit difficult to play, just because like when you're trying to hit a chord or a note, the finger kind of, depending how fat your fingers are, kind of goes over to another string, and that it mutes that string when it's not supposed to. So you have to like kind of angle it just so it doesn't hit any of the other strings, and it's harder to do when you got like chubby fingers like yours truly. If you got like long slender fingers,
you know, if you're a slong person who lends a lot of money, you're a good guitar player. That's just science.
Side note, Schlong Lender is a good name for a porn star. Sorry.
Anybody wants that? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's Schlong Lender. I feel like he's Jewish. I feel like that would be a circumcised porn star.
Oy vey. Did I mention the AC is off in this room? So the heat might be getting to me a little bit.
But how many chords have you learned on the guitar?
A couple, like E minor and like a D. There's that one where you press the two fingers on like on the second fret. That's like the easiest one. I can do that. Okay. So now I'm just trying to figure out how to go from one chord to another quick enough, so it looks like a smooth transition. It's not as clunky.
Right. Have you gotten to the point you can play any songs yet, or are you still just doing like fingering and that sort of thing, learning the chords?
Teehee. Fingering. We're children. I'm still working on chords and, you know, my playing notes and fingering and all that stuff. So I'm still, I don't feel confident that I can, like, bust out a guitar in front of people and play, like, you know, Wonderwall or something. Like, I'm still learning how to walk here.
Is that your dream? Is Wonderwall, like, your goal song?
I think so. I mean, I just said Wonderwall because, like, I remember that being, like, the go-to song for a while for any, body with like an acoustic guitar in college, wants to impress some girls on a college campus. You're like, hey, you want me to play a Crash Into Me or Crash Into You or Wonderwall or something?
Yeah. Yeah. You could be the guitar guy at the party.
Yeah, I can. Then John Belushi can come from behind and smash my guitar into a wall.
Right, right. And Mike Birbiglia can write a song about you.
Which song is that?
He has a song called Guitar Guy at the Party.
Oh, wow. That was a deep cut. I did not get that
about
reference.
About the guy who always like brings his guitar and breaks it out at the big party. But no, I'm impressed you're doing that. It's nice to have a project in quarantine when you have more time in your hands. And I'm impressed by anybody who has any musical aptitude, because I do not. Which, I mean, you may have noticed if you're a regular listener to this podcast that Darren sings a lot more often than I do. And there is a good reason for that. I am not a good singer.
Yeah, but I have a song in my heart, John. But you're also, but you're like me, you're a huge fan of music. Mm-hmm. And you're a fan of like the tunes, and you probably collect a lot of vinyl. And one movie that has an amazing soundtrack is the movie we're about to talk about today. That's Adventureland.
Look at you! You took like the scenic route on that transition.
You like that? Like that?
Music. This movie has music.
But no, I mean, like one of the great things about this movie is like the soundtrack. It slaps, as the kids say. But I mean, we'll get into it in a bit. But yeah, the soundtrack is legit.
Yeah, this movie, Adventureland, it was made in 2009. It was written and directed by Greg Mottola, who you might know. He directed Superbad, is probably what he's best known for. He was also a director on Undeclared, which I was a big fan of.
Yeah, Undeclared was a great TV show. It's like it's what Apatow did right after Freaks and Geeks, right?
Yeah, yeah. He kind of... Undeclared, it was a show, as you might guess from the title, it took place in college, and it centered on a student who was undeclared, had undecided in his major, and I think it arose out of Judd Apatow. He felt bad after Freaks and Geeks was canceled, and Freaks and Geeks took place in high school. He was like, okay, well, my actors are all unemployed now. If it takes me another year or two to get a show off the ground, they'll be college age by then, so let's do a show that takes place in college. And it only ended up starring Seth Rogen. He was the only person from Freaks and Geeks who repeated on Undeclared. But a few others came in for guest shots.
Right. Like, I think there was an episode where Ben Stiller showed up. Undeclared, it had a Jay Baruchel or Baruchel.
Yeah, Jay Baruchel played the lead role. It was written for Jason Segel, who ended up playing another part and came on for a few guest shots. And Martin Starr, who stars in our movie today, also... came in for a guest shot on Undeclared.
Look at all the connections we're making. It's all coming together.
Well, you know, the comedy world, I mean, it's like you find people that you enjoy working with who do good work. You want to keep on working with those people. So you find other projects to do together. And I think that's so cool. It's fun to follow people from project to project. And with this movie Undeclared, I remember when this came out in 2009, and I remember the TV ads, and the TV ads, they really played up Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader, who are the SNL stars who star in this movie.
But the movie's, I think that movie was Undeclared as Adventureland.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I meant Adventureland. Excuse me. Thank you for the correction. Yeah, the TV ads for Adventureland really made it look like, oh, it's this wacky comedy and it's starring Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader, because they were both very popular at the time. And it didn't look appealing to me. It didn't look especially funny. It didn't look like a type of movie I wanted to see. And then I saw a review of it that compared it very favorably to Freaks and Geeks. And Freaks and Geeks is one of my all-time favorite TV shows. So I was like, oh, if it's like in the vein of Freaks and Geeks, that's definitely something I want to see. So I made it out to the theater post-haste. And I really, really love the film. It's just a wonderful film, man.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that you and I kind of bonded over, because, like, I think when we first kind of were talking, maybe a year or two ago, like, we both mentioned Adventureland and how, you know, we both liked it and we both seen it. And I remember, like, I think I saw this in a theater. I think I did. But, like, I remember really liking it and wanted to talk to people about it. But I couldn't find anybody who had also seen it. Like, every time I mentioned this movie, people were like, Adventureland, nah, I kind of missed it. So, yeah. I think it's because of that, because, like, it made the commercials kind of made it look like a wacky slapsticky comedy. But then one of the things you said is like, yeah, it's like one long episode of Freaks and Geeks. It had the very Freaks and Geeks and also like a John Hughes movie type of feel about mm-hmm. it as well.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. I actually own this movie on DVD, and you know, we decided to do it. You know, at the end of our last episode, we were like kind of at a loss what movie we were going to do next. And then after we stopped recording, we decided like literally 5 minutes after we stopped recording. So sorry if anybody was looking forward to a poll or wanting to suggest stuff. We just decided it on our own. But I've got the DVD here. I can read the back of it to familiarize people.
Let's do it.
Okay. From the director of Superbad comes Adventureland, a smart, witty comedy we can all relate to. When James Brennan, Jesse Eisenberg, has to cancel his dream summer vacation and make some money for grad school, the only job he can get is at Adventureland, a tacky amusement park where the games are rigged and the rides make you hurl. But it's where he meets M, Kristen Stewart, Twilight, and his roller coaster ride to nowhere turns into the best summer ever. Filled with a carnival of colorful characters and set to a killer soundtrack, Adventureland is, quote, the kind of adventure we could all use more of. Kenneth Turand, Los Angeles Times. So, that's Adventureland.
Very nice, yeah. And, that description, yeah, it describes it pretty well. Like, it makes it sound more wacky than it is. It's, like, a lot more of a half-drama, half-comedy, I guess. But, like, either way. We'll get into it.
I find it a very sweet movie, and it's got some very tender moments. But yeah, and you'll find out. Highly recommended though. If you haven't seen it, definitely recommend seeing Adventureland. And unlike from when we did Palm Springs a few weeks ago, I don't think this movie's too spoiler dependent.
Yeah, I don't. Not really. No, this is. I mean, plus the movie's been out for like over 10 years, so.
Yes, that too. It's not a brand new thing. So the movie takes place in 1987. It is a period piece. And Jesse Eisenberg, he plays James Brennan, who is just graduating college. And the opening scene is him at an end of the year party, and he's dumped by his girlfriend. So it has a weird parallel with another famous Jesse Eisenberg movie, The Social Network, where he's also dumped by his girlfriend in the opening scene.
Yeah, when I rewatched it, I was like, oh, he gets dumped in Social Network too. I guess that's just his thing.
Yeah, that's kind of like Jesse Eisenberg's thing. He the director Greg Mottola, in one of the behind the scenes featurettes, he said, "I'm gonna rip off Jesse's quote here." He says, "Like, I have a gift for playing." A lot of directors at their awkward stages. And this is apparently a semi-autobiographical film from Greg Mottola, because he worked in a park that was actually called Adventureland, but it was located in Flushing, New York, I think. In the movie, it takes place in the Pittsburgh area.
Right. Actually, the Adventureland he worked at was out in Long Island, in Farmingdale, okay. Long Island. And I know that because... years ago, I've actually been to that amusement park back when I was like in, I think like grade school, we went out there for like a class trip. And then I think we went there another time when I was like a camp counselor for like a day camp.
Okay. I've never heard about you being a camp counselor. So we're going to have to get into those stories at some point. We will get into Darren's camp counselor stories when we cover Meatball someday, but
yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. That was my first job ever. Like after high school, I had to I wanted some money. So I was like, I got a job at, you know, speaking of first job, since this is James Brennan's first job, but yeah, my first job, I was a day camp counselor at the local YMCA.
Yeah, my first job was I was a bag boy at a Kroger, which is a grocery chain that is big in the South. You don't really have it up here in the North, but I was a bag boy in Kroger. I did that for a summer. Then summer after that, I worked in a movie theater. I worked concessions and tickets, and I cleaned the theaters too. And I also worked in a Blockbuster for 3 summers.
Oh, wow.
I think anybody who's had a like a shitty retail type job can find something to relate to in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I really like about this movie, is how it gets like the tone of it. I love like the way it looked, it has a very warm look to it. And mm-hmm. like like the hangouts after work that a lot of them do in this movie. It feels very realistic. Like, you know, you're all kind of working in this crappy job and it's like whatever. And you kind of maybe goof off a little bit on the job. You may have a drink or whatever. But then afterwards, you just go let off steam and hang out in the parking lot. It's like it all felt very real to me.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of drinking, smoking in the parking lot. You have the parties after work. And, yeah, it's the kind of thing you do when you're in your teens and your 20s and you're in a dead-end job like that. James, Jesse Eisenberg's character, he's dumped by his girlfriend. His friends are like, oh, well, is it because she found out you're a virgin? And James, he's honest almost to a fault. He's the sort of over-educated, over-intellectual character that Jesse Eisenberg is so good at. Go ahead.
Like you said, like he studies a lot and, but he's also very kind of naive to the ways of the world. And he's also like a big romantic too. He's like one of those guys that kind of wears his hearts on his sleeve and like has a very romanticized version of the world and how he sees his life going.
Right. And his original plan for his summer after he graduates is he was planning to go to Europe and, you know, like, you know, stay in youth hostels with his best friend. But then right after he graduates, he's out to like a celebratory lunch or dinner with his parents. And they say, look, your father was transferred to this different department, so we can't afford your graduation trip now or your rent in New York City next year. He's planning to go to Columbia for a graduate school, and Columbia is holding a spot for him. And so he's got this giant monkey wrench thrown into his plans. He can't go to Europe with his best friend. It's looking unlikely he can go to Columbia, so he has to get a job.
Right. But his best friend, Eric, who's played by Michael Ziegen, who you might recognize, he's Joel in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel now. Mm. But his friend Eric says, like, you know, you do what you got to do. You get a job, make the money. And like when the summer's over, you can crash with me at my place. I'm definitely going to New York, and like you can stay with me. I can float you some money. So yeah. Eric is like kind of looking out for him and saying, you know, giving up a place to stay and sort of giving him a little light, you know, an end of tunnel thing. And also
something to look forward to. He also says like, hey, I'll be with you in spirit this summer. And he gives James a nice bag of weed.
Yeah, like a huge Ziploc bag full of joints, which comes into play later in the movie.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's a nice bag of weed. I'm not a weed smoker, so I don't know what nice weed is really. But
yeah,
it looked okay. It's probably actually oregano, but
yeah, there was a lot of it, so that makes me think it was good.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, or maybe it's cheap skunk ass weed, and who knows?
Whatever, man.
Call in, folks. Was that good weed in the movie? We don't know.
Right. All weed dealers, call in. Let us know. Let us know about the sticky icky.
Exactly. So James, he's desperately looking for a summer job in Pittsburgh, but he's not really qualified for anything. He was like a lit major. It was like comparative literature and Renaissance studies. Just not anything practical for a real world job.
Yeah, I like that scene because like that's when like you know, college grad finds out, oh, my degree really doesn't transfer well into the real workforce here.
Yeah. This is, I don't have any useful skills. At one point he says he's turned down for a job driving a cement truck, or he can't even get an interview for that. And he says, I'm not even qualified for manual labor. So ultimately he gets this job at Adventureland, which is this amusement park nearby. And he gets there with, through his childhood friend, Frigo, who, as James says, he used to be my best friend, then I turned four. So,
yeah, Frigo, played by Matt Bush, it's an interesting performance because, like James and Frigo, they're more frenemies than actual friends.
Yeah.
They're just like, I mean, they grew up together, so that's how they know each other, but they're not like friends like that. I mean, like, Frigo's also like kind of a, he's an odd duck. He's like one of those dudes that just acts weird and does outlandish shit just like to do it. Like he's constantly punching James in the nuts and thinks it's hilarious. And
yeah,
he's one of those dudes. Like, I'm sure everybody grew up with him.
He's kind of a jerk. And yeah, he's always doing like the most annoying thing possible. And James has like outgrown him in many ways, but he's somebody that James is sort of friendly with just out of proximity more than anything else. You know, it's like if James had other options, he would not be friends with this dude, but
yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, Frigo, his big thing, practically every scene that James has with Frigo ends with James getting hit in the nuts unexpectedly.
Which was a thing. Yeah. The thing people did back then.
Yeah. And so he goes to Adventureland. He's hired on the spot by the manager and assistant manager, who are played by Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig, who are like the man and wife who run the park.
Yeah. And like, there's something I didn't notice until after I saw it. Maybe I noticed before, but I didn't catch on to it. You see, like, Paulette is who's, you know, Kristen Wiig's character. She's like kind of quiet and she kind of is in the background. And then Bobby, who's Bill Hader, he's like more the talkative one. He's the one that hires James with, because knowing James has no job experience at all, he's like, oh, you know, you'll you know, we'll give you a shot, you don't have any job experience or whatever, we got a t-shirt that fits you, so that's good,
right?
And like, he's more the talkative one, and I didn't realize that Bobby is the assistant manager and Paulette is actually the manager.
Yeah, yeah. The dynamic that you see in the movie seems reversed, because Bobby seems very much more in charge, but that's just kind of their natural personalities. And Bill Hader, he's got a comical mustache, a very handlebar. I keep wanting to say, like, because he just unfortunately passed away, it's like a Wilford Brimley type mustache.
Oh, R.I.P. Yeah, like a Wilford Brimley, like Ron Swanson. Not quite Sam Elliott, but getting there.
It's Sam Elliott territory, sure.
Yeah, and like, whenever you see a man with a mustache, you just immediately assume, oh, he's in charge here. The mustache commands respect.
A man with an impressive mustache projects authority. I mean, that's, yeah.
Right.
So James, he's like, hey, I'd really like to, you know, work in the rides division, because, you know, that, of course, if you're working in an amusement park, that seems like the most fun thing to do. And Bill Hader, though, he's just like, you seem like a games guy. You're more of a game guy. And so he has to just go run these shitty carnival games, half of which are rigged. And it's interesting, you find out how they're rigged, exactly. And I'm sure this is drawn from Greg Mottola's actual life.
I mean, I think he talked about it. He said, like, I think he kind of said the games weren't rigged, but, like, he's heard of enough places where the games... I mean, this is always something... Oh, my voice got high. This is always something I've kind of thought that, like, are these games rigged every time? I think Greg didn't confirm yes or no. Maybe it's statute of limitations or something, but...
This is in the commentary?
I think so. Yeah, it was. Wow. And actually, this is where we see the character Joel, played by Martin Starr, who shows James around the park. You know, the great Martin Starr, the deadpan hero. He's kind of like the man's Aubrey Plaza, and he kind of shows him around the park.
Yeah. And you learn how some of these games are rigged. They're like these figures that are on a spinning around on a platform, and you have to throw softballs to knock the hats off them, but half the hats are glued on. There's like the ring toss thing where you put the ring on the bottle, but he demonstrates, like, oh, well, look, I'm dropping this from 3 inches away and it doesn't even hit the red bottle. And there's like a basketball hoop where the basketball hoop is pounded into like more of an oval, so you can't actually get a basketball through the hoop. So just all sorts of things, the little things they do to rig the games.
The fix is in, people. The fix is in.
Yeah. So this, you know, this is not a real high-end amusement park.
Oh, no, it is not.
And they tell James, you know, the their basic rules, like, you know, no free anything, and you never give away a giant ass panda as a prize. Because they don't have many of those and they can't afford to give them away, because I don't know how much one of those goes for, probably at least $50.
Those pandas seem pretty inexpensive. I'm surprised that's like they can't give them away like that, but I don't know.
I don't know. I think the good size ones, nobody cares. But the big ones that are as big as a person, yeah, I could see those running high.
Right. It's the gray goose of carny prizes.
Yes. Yes.
Top shelf.
So that's the big rule. Nobody ever wins a giant ass panda. And so James, you know, he's not thrilled to be at this job, but he meets Joel. Joel's nice. They bond. Joel is also another person who's like way too smart for this job. And he meets M, who is played by Kristen Stewart. And he meets M, who's also a games worker, as is Joel. And he meets M when M comes and defends him against some cheating customers who are trying to get away with winning a giant-ass panda through cheating.
Right, because like, basically there's one guy who's like in a Molly Hatchet t-shirt who's talking to James trying to distract him. And then the other guy who's like has like a acid-wash denim jacket and like a American flag bandana on his head. He like kind of carries, like he has like a son. He carries his son and puts him over to the milk bottles and have him drop the ring on the milk bottles and be like, hey, look at the kid won. Give him the giant panda. And then that's when James like, yeah, no, I saw you. You were cheating. You didn't do that. And then that's when the, you know, bandana man gets all rough and brawlic and showed that he's brandishing a knife. Because I guess, were people carrying knives like that back in the 80s? I kind of remember they were, I think, when I saw that scene.
I mean, I can't imagine the park probably didn't have rules about that sort of thing. So yeah, somebody could walk in with a big ass knife. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, so like,
it's unrealistic.
Yeah, so he flashes a knife and like, hey, you should, you know, just get my kid that fucking panda. And then that's when M steps in, you know, Kristen Stewart's catching, but like, yeah, here's the panda, you know, just have a good day. And yeah, you know, and then they kind of strike up a relationship saying, yeah, you don't want to lose your life over a panda. Just, you know, yeah. Bobby will be cool with it.
You don't want to get stabbed. And she's like, don't worry, I'll tell them you were held at knife point and you had to give it away. I mean, but really she just gave away the panda to defuse the situation.
Right.
You know, cause she's been around the block. She's been doing this job for probably a summer or two. And so she knows how to handle this sort of stuff. James, it's like his second day. So he's just trying to obey the rules. And we also meet the maintenance guy at the park, Connell, who's played by Ryan Reynolds. And he's got kind of a mystique about him. We see him kind of striding into the park and he's carrying a guitar. And the word on him is like, oh, well, he once jammed with Lou Reed. So he's got like a definite aura about him. Everybody kind of looks up to the guy.
Yeah, he's like basically like the local cool guy where everybody's like, oh, you know, he's also a married man, but and he's also like you said, like he's in a band, he's a musician, and he put out the story, or somebody put out the story about how he jammed out with Lou Reed, which is of course is one of James's idols. Like James loves Lou Reed. Actually, like if you notice throughout the movie, like the theme of Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground kind of comes into play a lot throughout the movie. It's in there.
Yeah, there are a lot of Lou Reed songs on the soundtrack. Like you hear "Pale Blue Eyes" like early on, and some other things. James asks Connell about this story early on. He's like, "Oh, I hear you once jammed with Lou Reed. I got to hear that story." And Connell just kind of plays it off. He's like, "Ah, well, don't believe everything you heard." but you know, he realizes that this story gives him like some real cachet. So.
Right. So then after that, like a lot, I mean, they're talking about Mike Connell, who, you know, in the parking lot when they're hanging out after work. But then you see M isn't really in the conversation. She's like very stone faced, which is like a bit of a tell, which is something we'll get to later. This happened at one point where we see that Joel likes to smoke a pipe, like an old man pipe. And he's smoking it in the parking lot with his friends. And like somebody throws a corn dog at his head.
Yeah,
you know, because he's smoking a pipe, and then one of the other employees, Sue, played by Paige Howard, who's Ron Howard's daughter.
I was wondering if she was related to Ron Howard because she is a redhead, and it looked like there could be enough family resemblance there. So she's another daughter from Ron Howard, like what's her name? What's the Earl Howard daughter?
Bryce Dallas Howard.
Thank you.
If you are a redhead, you are Ron Howard's child. That's how it is.
Yeah, and we discovered on Arrested Development that Isla Fisher also Ron Howard's daughter. So
that's right. I'm sure Emma Stone is also Ron Howard's daughter.
Amy Adams, Ron Howard's daughter.
Lucille Ball, rest in peace, Ron Howard's daughter.
Don't ask us how it's possible, but yes, Lucille Ball. Danny Bonaducci, also Ron Howard's daughter.
Ronald McDonald, Ron Howard's daughter.
Ron Howard is very fertile, people. That is what we're saying.
That's right. He's responsible for half of Ireland.
Yep, yep. He's, any redheaded person you see, Ron Howard's daughter.
Yep, that's how it is.
Yep. Em has a party at her house. She invites James over to it because she seems cool, and it's, you know, a lot of the amusement park workers are there partying up a storm, and he and Em seem to bond. He joins Em for a swim in her parents' pool, and he's in his tidy whiteies, and when she gets out of the pool, he's like, no, I'm cool. I'm gonna hang back in the pool a little bit. And I think most any guy watching this movie knew what was going on with James at that moment.
Yeah, just like, I get it, man. I get it.
Yeah, I need a minute or two to settle. I need, things are going on downstairs, and just gotta wait for this to wear down.
Gotta put down the tent.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, like, as soon as he starts to get out, Fergo is right there and he's like, "Hey, boner."
Because it's fun to point out your friend's boners. It's hilarious.
Yeah. 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 I mean, Fergo, he's got to be, I'm assuming somewhere between 19 and 21, but he's got the maturity level of about 12.
Yeah. Oh, very much. If that, you're being generous.
I am being generous. I think the definitive Fergo shot is at one point in the party, James, he's talking to Em and they're hitting it off. They're bonding over their shared taste in music. And James just glances over and he sees Fergo. He's actually urinating on the glass door.
Yeah, that's like, that dude's an animal. What's wrong with him?
Yeah. And Em doesn't see this at all. She's in her parents' house, which is kind of nice because her dad's a lawyer. So her parents have money, and James is like, "Well, what are you doing working at Adventureland?" She's like, "Oh, it gets me out of the house." We find out she doesn't have the happiest home life.
Yeah, we also find out that her mom passed away from I believe it was cancer. And yes. as she was going through chemo, her dad met Francie, played by Mary Birdsong, who, if you know her from Reno 911 fame, mm-hmm. And then they started hooking up. And M says, "Oh yeah, Francie, she actually wears wigs because she was married before she got divorced, and the stress from that divorce she went through like a little meltdown, and she kind of lost her hair from it. So now she wears wigs all the time."
Yeah, she notes the irony, like, my mom lost her hair from chemo, and then my dad starts hooking up with a bald woman. So her mom passed away 2 years ago, and her dad remarried a year ago.
Yikes. I don't know.
Actually, I should mention, I actually met Mary Birdsong once, years and years ago. I think it must have been before this movie was made. It was somewhere in the early 2000s. I remember it was somewhere right before her show Crossballs was about to premiere. So it was like pre-Reno 911.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
That's
pretty cool. Comedy Central show that's kind of forgotten. Apparently, it debuted in 2004, so it was somewhere around 2003, 2004 that I met her. And just met her in passing at a party, but she was nice as I recall.
Oh, pretty nice. Yeah, I don't know if I remember that. What was the name of the show?
Crossballs. It was sort of a parody of like Crossfire or Hardball. That sort of thing. It didn't last very long. We had Mary Birdsong, Matt Besser, Andrew Daly, Jerry Minor, and Chris Tallman.
It's a solid cast.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like they did 24 episodes. The 24th episode, unaired.
Whew, all right.
Unaired. It looks like it only ran from July to August of 2004. So I think it was just like a summer replacement thing. It ran like every night. It probably ran after the Daily Show, I'd imagine. So
Okay. Oh yeah, probably before Colbert Report came around. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it was they had a lot of improv comedians on it, so I believe they just sort of assumed characters and then they debated these issues in character. So.
All right. Well, guys, look up Crossball and see what you think.
Yeah, I don't know. There are probably clips floating around on YouTube. Who knows?
Dark web.
Yeah. Yeah. Go to Google. Just type in dark web, and that'll take you to the dark web.
That's how the dark web works.
Yeah, yeah. And you get to find out all about Ron Howard's kids, all his redheaded daughters.
All of Ireland.
Yes.
Aaron Begora.
But after the party, we find out that Em has a secret. She's she gets a call after the party, and somebody comes over, and dun dun dun, it's Connell. It's the maintenance guy played by Ryan Reynolds. So she's actually hooking up with Connell.
Yeah, this is where you learn Connell is a bit of a cad, as they say. And I like the way Ryan Reynolds played it, because, like, I mean, we kind of know Ryan Reynolds as being like a very kind of energetic, fast talking, you know, wisecracking kind of dude. But here it's very subdued, his performance. He tones it down quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a much more low key kind of performance, more of a straight dramatic performance. And you're kind of, I think you kind of expect early on, you're like, oh, Ryan Reynolds, he's going to be like the mentor character. He'll be like, you know, his Bill Murray in Meatballs or something, you know, and he'll teach him about life and that. And although, like, people in the park look up to him, yeah, he's not really that guy. He's not the greatest guy.
He's a big old bag of scum.
I mean, you know, well, he's cheating on his wife, and, you know, he's maybe not all he's cracked up to be. Also at the park, the other big event of the summer is Lisa P is back.
Yeah, one of the workers, I think his name is Munch in the movie. He's literally running through the park saying, "Lisa P is back," like Paul Revere. Lisa P is back.
Sadly, Munch not played by Richard Belzer. I think they missed a bit there. I think we could have had Richard Belzer playing John Munch in the movie, and we could have thus connected this movie to the world of Homicide, Life on the Street, and Law and Order SVU, and all the shows that Munch has been in. I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I could believe Richard Belzer as a 20-year-old carny.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was busy. I don't know.
I don't know. But I think, you know, whenever you have the opportunity to put Richard Belzer as John Munch into your project, you do it.
Damn straight.
Yeah. But Lisa P, we have to settle for Lisa P. Lisa P, who, she's like the hot girl of the park. And she is a hot girl.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody, you know, who's worked in a workplace environment or, you know, anything like that, you know there's one, you know, woman that's like the object of most of the men's eye in the workplace. Where when they walk down the street, all the guys are like, you know, hummina, hummina, hummina.
Yeah, yeah. Martin Starr's character Joel refers to her ass as, I think, like the platonic ideal. And yeah, she's just a very attractive, very vivacious girl. She like dances to all the songs that are playing in the park, and, you know, they're playing all sorts of 80s songs, like Amadeus. They say plays 20 times a day there.
Oh yeah, that's a running gag. But that one song, Amadeus, you know, Rock Me Amadeus, plays so many times it kind of drives everybody crazy. Yeah. I did like that one scene where Lisa P walks up to Joel and says, "Hey, Joel, how you doing?" And you know, James is there as well. And then I think Joel says, "Hey, what do you do? Why are you working here this summer?" And then Lisa P says, "Yeah, you know, my dad got hurt at work, so, you know, I gotta work here this summer and chip in." And then I think Joel says, "Oh, that sucks. You know, my mom has shingles." So. And there's that one part where, like, as soon as Joel said that, he immediately regrets saying that.
Yeah, yeah. He's just, I think a lot of people can relate to that. Like, you know, you're talking to somebody you're really attracted to, and then you say that dumb thing, and you're just like, oh, why did that come out of my mouth?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the main things I love about this movie. Like, there's some moment that at least one person can relate to. We're like, oh, I know exactly that guy. Oh, I remember exactly that moment.
Yeah, it just nails all those little moments. So, you know, as the summer goes on, James and M are bonding more and more. James makes M a mixtape.
That's serious.
That is serious. I mean, we're old enough to remember making mixtapes. And that's a lot of effort. It's not just like slapping together an iTunes playlist, people. It's you have to have like two tape decks. You got to copy that over from one tape to the other. You got to sync it up properly.
Did you like write out on a piece of paper like what the set list was going to be before you recorded it? Like, and you were like trying to figure out the order?
Yeah, yeah. I'm anal retentive enough that I plan that stuff out, man. You know, you got to, you know, it's like John Cusack in High Fidelity. There are a lot of rules. You got to start off strong, but then you got to take it up a notch. Then you got to take it down a notch.
Yeah, in the big finale. Yeah.
It's
an art form. That's all I'm saying. Like making if you give somebody a mixtape, that says a lot. That's saying like I thought about you and I spent time on this. This is, you're basically saying we're together now. It's almost an engagement.
Yeah, it's like teenage engagement.
Yeah, it's like I claim you.
Yeah, so they have a real emotional bond. James confesses to M that he is actually a virgin. They end up making out that night. So things are going well. They're having a real sweet first love sort of thing.
Some loving, having a blast. There's also one point where they meet up at a bar, and that's where James tells her that, you know, he's a virgin and all this stuff. And then we also see as they're at the bar, Connell comes in with his wife, and James is like, oh hey Connell, how you doing? Like you know about this bar? And then Connell's like, yeah, this is my spot. Everybody knows that. So like when Connell sees M and James, he looks a little not bothered, but he looks like,
There's a little twinge, you know. There's he's like, oh, this is a thing. I didn't know this was a thing. And you know, we the audience know, of course, that Connell and M are hooking up on the side, but James doesn't know this, and presumably Connell's wife doesn't know either. So,
right. I mean, and then that's when they start talking about Connell, and M's like, yeah, you know, I think James says, oh wow, that's his wife. She's really pretty. And then M is like, well, you know, they kind of are in a sad marriage. Like he didn't really want to be married. Now he's trapped. And I mean, I don't know if that's how it actually is, or maybe that's just what Mike told M what their situation was, but like she kind of like downplays their marriage a bit.
Yeah. Did they have kids? I don't remember.
I don't believe so, no.
Oh, okay. Because, I mean, it seems like kids are a big way of how you get trapped into a marriage, but.
Yeah. I mean, they never say how he's trapped. They're just saying, I mean, I guess what Mike Connell's character is, like, he is a cad and he's a bit of a. You know, a bit of a player, as I said, he's a felonious person. But like, I guess I remember like seeing one of the behind the scenes clips about this, and Ryan Reynolds says like, you know, Mike Connell, he's romantic, but in the negative way. Like he's like he does have like, you know, this artistic romantic spirit, but it's not like positive like James is. He's like more of a he kind of uses his romanticism in like. Not great ways that where people could get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. So the summer like kind of rolls on. James and M are bonding. Lisa P, who's the hot girl, she approaches James cause she's like, hey, I hear you have some weed. And James goes out and gets high with Lisa P. They bond a little bit. You know, as you do, you know, different days at your shitty job, you bond with different coworkers.
Right. And like, I guess, you know, I guess word gets around that James has weed. So like pretty much everybody is like, oh, I heard you have weed. Let's hang out.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah. As you do. But James has fallen hard for M. He thinks he's in love with her. And we see all the characters. They go out to Razzmatazz, which is the local dance club where, you know, Lisa P is like the goddess of the dance floor. You see her out there and she's just like, she's there with her friend, Karen, I think it was.
Wait, Lisa P's friend?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's Kelly, I believe.
Kelly. Okay. I knew it was a K name. I don't think he ever has any dialogue, but, see her and they're both like dancing perfectly in sync and they pan over to like several of the guys from Adventureland, and they're just gaping at Lisa B.
Yeah, because she, I mean, she is easy on the eyes, we'll say.
Yeah, she's all that.
All that in a bag of chips ahoy. So, like, they're dancing, and they're getting, you know, they're dancing, like, you know, Point of No Return by Exposé and Obsession and all these, like, disco hits from the 80s. It's quite the scene.
Yeah, yeah. And Joel ends up making out with Sue, who is the character played by Ron Howard's daughter. And, you know, Joel is very pleased, very impressed about that. He's like, oh, hey, maybe something's going to happen here. This is cool. We have a scene at the park the next day where one of the annoying guys from the club who works at the park, he asks Lisa P out to, I think it was a Judas Priest concert.
Yeah, that was Pete. That's actually Sue's brother.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize that those characters were brother and sister. I somehow missed that before. But Lisa P is like, no, thanks. You know, it's obvious she thinks he's a jerk. And she's like, oh, you better go clean up that puke on the ride.
Right, and then I think because James is hanging out with Lisa P at that point, I think Lisa P is like, oh, yeah, no, I'm actually, like, when Pete asks Lisa out to the Judas Priest concert, he's like, oh, I'm busy that night. And Pete's like, I didn't even tell you what night it was. He's like, well, yeah, you know, I'm busy all night. I'm like, I'm actually going out with James. James, why don't you take me out?
Yeah, yeah. So she asks him out. She asks James out right in front of Pete. And she's like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, I'd like to date a nice guy for a change.
Yeah, and I mean, well, actually, and if James considers it, because before this, there's a scene where Mike Connell's mom calls him at work, because basically Mike kind of stays at his mom's place sometimes. That he takes care of his mom, and like a lot of times, like he'll invite M over to his mom's house to like hook up,
they hook up in his mom's basement,
which is pretty scummy.
I mean, and they say romance is dead.
Want to make out at my mom's?
Keep dreaming, people, and it can happen for you.
You too can obtain this goal.
But you know, hey, when you look like Ryan Reynolds, the women are going to come over and bang you in your mom's basement.
Oh gosh, that's right.
I'm assuming that's how it works, you know?
Yeah, so, hey. But, yeah, so anyway, so Mike's mom says, I think there's something wrong with the pilot light. So Mike goes over to his mom's house, and he takes James, who's on his break with him, saying, oh, hey, James, you got weed? I heard you got weed. Come with me. So they go to his mom's house. He smokes some of James' weed. And there was this one quick scene that I didn't notice, that where Satellite of Love is playing on the radio as they go. Mm-hmm. And then Mike was like, oh, hey, this is a really good song. And then James says, oh, yeah, that's Lou Reed, that's Satellite of Love.
Yeah.
And Mike goes, oh, yeah, 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 I know that song. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it shows for a minute that he doesn't recognize Satellite of Love, and he claims to have jammed Lou Reed. And if you know anything about Lou Reed, you know Satellite of Love. So right.
Anything about Mystery Science Theater 3000, you know Satellite of Love.
Damn.
The Satellite of Love, named after that Lou Reed song.
Damn straight.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Joel, Martin Starr's character, he's kind of smitten with Sue because they made out one night after their night out at Razzmatazz, and he gives Sue a book that's important to him. And Sue very kind of cruelly and coldly tells him, oh, you know, I can't be with you because my family's Catholic and you're Jewish, and I can't be with a Jewish boy.
Yeah, and I was like, wow.
Yeah. And this is in 1987, by the way.
Like, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, Catholics couldn't mingle with Jewish folks, but I guess...
Well, I mean, if it's a real strict religious family. I mean, she's obviously just too... you know, she's not a big enough person to go against her family, even if she perhaps likes Joel for who he is. And, you know, this, of course, makes Joel feel rotten. And
yeah, you don't say.
Yeah. And M hears about this, and M, to her credit, she immediately goes off to Sue and just says, that was a horrible thing you did. You and I, we are not friends anymore.
Yeah. Way to go, M. That's, and I actually listened to the commentary about this, and like Greg Mottola says, well, he grew up in at Long Island in a neighborhood where it was half Catholic and half Jewish. And it wasn't, yeah, like it wasn't outwardly expressed that Catholic people shouldn't date Jewish people, but it was kind of understood. It was like, you know, like, hey, just don't, you know, don't go out with them.
Yeah, it was just the unspoken thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it sucks. I'm sure it still goes on.
Hands off the menorah.
So James, he ends up taking Lisa P out on a date, even though he's long since fallen for M at this point. But
I should go back a little bit. Like, he agrees to go out with Lisa P because, like, when Mike and James were driving out to Mike's mom's house, Mike asks, oh, hey, I heard about things are going. How are things going with you and Em? I heard you're hooking up and, like, you're, like, you know, kind of going out and stuff. And then James is like, yeah, I like her a lot. Like, I think I'm in love with her. Mm-hmm. Then Mike hears that. He's like, all right. And then that causes Mike to go to Em and say, hey, your boyfriend says he's, like, in love with you. Or he thinks he's in love with you. What's up with that? And I think that caused Em to talk to James saying, hey, you know, just so you know, I got a lot of messed up stuff going on in my life right now. I don't want anything serious. I want to take it slow. And, like, I kind of want to, you know, don't expect too much from me type of thing. She wants to slow things down. So,
yeah. And Mike, also Connell on the side, he also just sort of encourages James to, like, pursue things with Lisa P because, you know, James says, like, oh, hey, Lisa P asked me out. And he's like, yeah, fuck yeah, you do that. It's Lisa P. I mean, come on. You get a chance to get with Lisa P, you get with Lisa P. So,
yeah, I mean, I get that. Like, if you ever get a chance to date somebody who's way out of your league, you got to do just for the culture, just for the little guy.
Well, you know, also James, you know, he's still a very young guy. And when you're a young guy, you do stupid things and you do things that maybe you shouldn't. Like when you have a semi-girlfriend and you go out with another girl.
Yeah, that too. I guess they really weren't on a break. I guess, you know, what he did was kind of like dopey, but, you know, it's folly of youth.
Anyway, so he takes Lisa P out to the restaurant, and in a neat touch, you see him, he takes her out to the restaurant where it's one of the places you see him interviewing at in early in the movie. You see the same manager walk by.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a nice subtle touch. And so he and Lisa P bond a bit. Frigo, James's nemesis, kind of shows up on the date, and he's like, holy shit, you're actually out with Lisa P. And he makes, he basically shakes James down for money not to tell people about it because James is very concerned about word about this getting back to M.
Yeah, but that's a thing, though. Like, James told Frigo that he was taking Lisa P out. And, like, but he said, don't tell anybody, but I'm taking her out. And I'm going to be – and he even told it at a restaurant. So it's like, well, what did you expect was going to happen? Like, if you didn't want this to get out, why would you tell – and he told Joel, too. I guess one
he's
of those things.
Young and he is stupid.
All right, yeah, that's fair enough.
You know, because like when you're young, you do things you shouldn't do, and you also take people at their word more than you should. So he's like, you know, oh, don't tell anybody about this, and he's expecting them to not tell anybody about it. But while they're on their dinner date, Lisa P. Tells James, like, hey, you know, Connell's not that great of a guy. He's like hooked up with girls in the park. He like cheats on his wife a lot. He's not as good a guy as you think he is.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, it's Lisa saying, hey, yeah, I think Lisa also says, yeah, he took some girl to his mom's house and like they hooked up and they banged it out. Like he's kind of a scummy dude. He hit on me when he was married. Like he's like, she's basically saying he's not all he appears to be.
Yeah, he's not a good guy. When James is driving Lisa home, like she drops her hairbrush in the car, and he's fishing. James is fishing around for it, and he finds a big liquor bottle under his car seat, and he's like, "What the hell? This must be my dad's."
Yeah, because James, I don't think James has a car. He's been driving his dad's car this whole time, and
right, he's been driving his dad's car or hitching a ride with Frigo to the park because we see him riding into the park with Frigo later in the film.
Right, and that's another thing too. Like with James's dad, he's kind of like throughout the movie, you see his dad is like drinking quite a bit. Like in most scenes, he's either drinking or he's like asleep from drinking. And it does, and like at that, it's at that point where James finds the liquor bottle in his dad's car. He realizes, oh wait, I think my dad's an alcoholic.
I mean, yeah, if you're keeping a liquor bottle under your car seat, it says all sorts of not good things. Your life is not going well, I think it is.
Yeah.
And we should call out the performances of the actors playing James's parents. Jack Gilpin is Mr. Brennan, and the great Wendy Malick is Mrs. Brennan. They're both so good. They just have a few scenes, but they make the most of what they got, man.
Yeah, it's like I really like how like Wendy Malick is like she's sort of the more the one trying to keep the family together. She's like more like the taskmaster, and James's dad is a little bit more laid back, a little bit more hands off. Because like I mean, I guess he's still hurting from being demoted at work, so he's just kind of drinking.
Yeah, I mean we don't. The movie's basically told from James's perspective, so we don't really find out the full story of what's going on with his dad. But there's obviously like some stuff going on. Like his life is going off the rails, and his drinking's ramping up, and yeah, and that comes back a little later. James he makes out with Lisa P in the car a little bit, feels her up a little over the blouse action.
Hey now.
Thing going on, she's like, "Hey, settle easy there, Tiger."
Yeah, easy, buddy, easy.
But you know, it goes pretty well. They seem to hit it off, and
yeah, kind of. I mean, but there's also that one scene where they're sharing a joint outside of a store, like outside the restaurant, and James is trying to have like a little bit more of a philosophical, like a deeper conversation with her.
Right.
And she says something, you know, like as he's talking about, you know, he wants to travel. He wants to be a travel writer or like a journalist.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking about, you know, seeing the world and everything. And then she's kind of not listening to him. And she says, "Would you rather have a speedboat or a sailboat? Because, like, I feel like speedboats are cool, but like sailboats are cool." Like, she's not as deep as maybe James thought she was.
Yeah, she's very attractive, but she is kind of vapid. She doesn't have the depth that Em or Joel do. So when James walks back into his house, he found out he missed a call from Emily, so he feels awful about that. Next day at work, he's made some pot cookies, and Emily and Joel they all get high at work. They all get very high at work.
Yeah, very high. Like, I mean, basically, Em apologized for, you know, the night before where she said, like, you know, she doesn't want anything serious because I guess she feels bad that maybe she let him on or something. So, but, you know, they have, like, these kind of reconciliation with these weed cookies. They're playing, they're driving around in bumper cars, listening to The Cure. I mean, my God, life is good.
Right. We see Joel, he's kind of messing around with that hat game where you're trying to knock the hats off the mannequins. And he's so high, he's messing things up. He knocks over one of the figures, and the customer realizes, oh, hey, the game's rigged. The hat's glued on. And the customer ends up punching Joel out. And one of that guy's buddies, like, chases James across half the park.
Yeah, because one of the guys was like, because, like, after Joel got punched out, then Em is like, hey, that's not cool, man. And then the guy, like, shoved Em. And then that's when James, you know, kicked it into high gear and was like, hey, get your hands off her. And then he kind of punched that dude in the gut. And then, like, he was like, oh, what'd I do? And then he just runs through the park while Breaking the Law plays over the...
Breaking the law. James runs into the office for safety, and we get to see... Bill Hader brandishing a baseball bat to fend off the guy.
Of course. When you see a dude with a baseball bat, just, you know, and there's no baseball field around, just go the other way.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the best that Bill Hader could do in 2009 because he wasn't a hitman yet. So.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So he could be more intimidating now, I'm assuming, because he's Barry.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Man's, man's a monster.
Exactly. In the aftermath of this, Joel quits the park. James goes out to see Joel. And, you know, Joel's rather depressed because, you know, he just quit his job. He got dumped by a girl he liked. He says to James, when James shows up at his house, he's like, I don't want to show you how crappy this place is. So let's meet up back in my backyard.
Yeah, because I think like, I mean, again, I've saw this in the behind the scenes, like how, mm-hmm. I mean, James isn't really super happy with the way his life's going. Cause mm-hmm. like, you know, he wasn't able to go to Europe and everything. So he's still kind of bummed out. But I mean, to Joel, James is having a pretty great time. He got to make out with two girls. Like, Joel's life is way worse than, and like, I think that's the one thing that upset Joel is like, you don't see how good you got it. You got this job, which ain't great, but you got to make out with two girls and you're doing way better than me. So don't come crying on my shoulder.
He outright says to James, like, you don't even appreciate what you have. You're with this amazing girl, Emily, and you're still trying to step out with Lisa P. I mean, you're being a fucking idiot. And and Joel, he's got a point. So he calls out James on his shit, which is good.
Yeah, and then I think after that, like, kind of James kind of takes it to heart, and then he goes, really pours his heart out to M, saying, like, James told M about his date with Lisa P, which he originally kind of lied about before. He was like, oh yeah, I was out with some friends. But he said, no, I was out with Lisa P. Like, you know, we made out. I felt her boobies. He didn't say that I did. But, I really don't want to be with, I really want to be with you. I really like you. And you know, I really want us to be a thing. And then they have this nice little line where like, M says, well, you don't have to tell me that. You don't owe me anything. And James like, but I want to owe you things. Like, James has he's very romantic. That's the only word I could think of to describe it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's got that youthful idealism. So this inspires M to go to Connell and just say, I can't do this anymore. You know, she has it out with Connell. She's just like, I just feel too horrible about myself, about us hooking up. You know, because I've got feelings for James, and you know, it's not right because you're married and yada yada yada. And that night, I keep wanting to call him Fergo. Fergo goes to James and he brings along one of like the guy who works the parking lot, Rich, who is I guess developmentally disabled somehow. And he's like, tell James what you told me. And he's like, oh, I saw M and Connell doing push-ups in Connell's car without any pants on.
Mm. The beast with two backs.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when James realizes, oh, my God, M has been hooking up with Connell all this time. And,
right, because then James calls M's house, because back when everybody had landlines. And then he talked to M's dad, and he was like, oh yeah, M's not here. She said that she was going to be out with you. And he was like, oh wait, she's not here. She's not here and she's not at her house, then she might be at Connell's mom's house.
Yeah. So, but we're skipping over something. There's something I just want to say. I love that Frigo has James's back here, because like everything we've seen from Frigo up until this point, it's just been him being a jerk and like hitting James in the nuts and shaking him down for money. But like when he realizes something this serious is going on, he's like, oh shit, no, this is bad. And he's got his buddies back. He like drives James out to Connell's mom's house. And so he's supporting him in the best way, in the best jerky kind of way that he can.
Yeah, they basically, like, Frigo basically steals his mom's car. They do that thing where you push the car out the driveway when you don't want to wake your parents up. And then they drive to Connell's mom's house to do a little bit of a stakeout and wait for M or somebody to come out because they see M's car. Mm-hmm. And, like, while they're waiting in the car, Frigo's like, hey, you know, I stole some of my grandma's cough syrup if you want some. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. But I love that because it gave Frigo a little depth. Like in most any other movie, he would just be the jerk and that's it. He would just be a jerky guy in every scene. But I love this because it shows that he is a good guy at heart, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I like it. And so basically what happens, M ends it with Connell. M leaves Connell's mom's house. James sees him. She confronts her on the you know, in front of everybody, mm-hmm. and not everybody, but, you know, and she, yeah. you know, she kind of admits, it's like, we hooked up before I met you. I didn't want you to find out this way. I'm sorry. Yeah. I fucked everything up. And of course, James leaves heartbroken, and it's,
yeah, I mean, they both screwed up, but as James says, he's like, I fucked up one time and I told you about it. You've been doing this thing for months. So this is like much, much worse. You know, you were way more dishonest with me than I was with you.
Yeah, like, I mean, I like the way
that he confessed to her and that she was caught, you know?
Yeah, it sucked. I mean, I like the way this movie does kind of like, you know, the workplace drama or high school drama. Mm-hmm. Like, it all feels very real.
Yeah, yeah. It's played very real, and it really works. I mean, it feels like a real fight, and it's not like a TV or movie fight where they like give these long impassioned speeches. They can barely get the words out because they are just so torn up. And so it's very short, simple sentences. And it's like, oh no, you didn't fuck up. I fucked up. And you know, it's the kind of messy fight that you have in life, you know?
Yeah. It's like when you're too emotional to like, you know, articulate what you're feeling, and it's not like an Aaron Sorkin dialogue. It's like it's very like sputtery, kind of, you know, emotion. Basically, like how I'm speaking right now. It's basically like a lot of emotion and not a lot of thought in your words.
Yeah, yeah. And so James, of course, he's really torn up about this. He ends up taking Lisa P out to Razzmatazz, the dance club, and he tells her all about M. And she's like, "Oh shit, that's really fucked up." And James is like, you can't tell anybody about this, though. Don't tell anybody. And then, like, the next day, word has spread through the entire park.
Yeah. Why does he keep telling people about things? Oh, boy.
Because I think he is a very honest person. And I think when you are a very honest person, you can have the tendency to assume that other people are as honest as you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
You see James, like in the opening scene, like one of his friends is like, "You didn't tell this girl that you were a virgin, right?" And he's like, "Well, I'm honest with people, and when I'm close to somebody, I'm honest with them." So he is very honest. He is honest to a fault almost. So yeah, he tells somebody about this, and they say, "Oh, don't worry, I'm not going to tell him." And he takes them at their word because he's a very honest person and he keeps his word generally.
The naivete of youth.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But I love it because, you know, he's a young guy and you do stupid things when you're a young guy. And this is him. So James, so word is spreading about M through the whole park. M quits. And James confronts Lisa P about this. He's like driving into the park with Frigo, and he sees M driving out, and she's obviously like very rattled. And he confronts Lisa P about this, and Lisa's like, Kelly has such a big mouth. Oh,
yeah.
You know, because like, and Lisa P thinks it's fine because Kelly is the only person that she told, you know, her best friend. And then Kelly is the one who has the big mouth and told everybody.
It's not her fault. It's Kelly's fault.
Doesn't take any responsibility. And she also has kind of a fucked up reading of it. She's like, well, I feel bad for Connell, but I have a hard time feeling bad for M. And James is like, Connell's married. And she's like, yeah, she's a homewrecker.
Men are just built that way. That's what men do.
Yeah. Yeah. It just shows what a double standard she has.
I kind of wondered about that. Cause like they did mention that earlier in the film that like Lisa P was also Catholic. Cause like, I think mm-hmm. when James talked to Connell about it, Connell was like, well, she's Catholic, so she won't let you do everything. So I was like, oh, is this like that? No, he said that. So I was wondering, oh, is this like another Catholic thing where it's like the dude, it's not his fault, it's all the woman's fault because like she's the homewrecker type of thing?
Yeah, well, I think it's also sort of like a very 80s kind of attitude where it's, you know, like, oh, men have to do this and women let them do that, you know? You know, that's an attitude very much of the time, I think.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Oof. Anyway, but, you know, she's just like, yeah, guys can't help themselves, and she's a homewrecker. So James is at his low point now. He's And we see him driving home. He's driving in his parents' car, and he's drinking from the bottle under the car seat. What was it? Was it like bourbon? Was it Jack Daniels or something?
I think it was vodka. I don't know. It was okay. It was Chekhov's bottle, as it were. Because they
I thought it was like a dark like a brown alcohol, but
I don't know. It was just some type of hooch.
Okay, yeah, I was thinking it was Jack Daniels, but whatever. It doesn't matter. He's drinking from that, and he comes home drunk, and he like falls asleep in the car, and we see his mother waking him up the next morning in the car, and she's like, "Do you want to explain how Mrs. Frigo's rhododendron got under our car tire?" And we see like the bush like wrapped around the car wheel.
Yeah, he basically like crashed into a tree, went through his neighbor's yard. He fucked up the car.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of damage to the car, and we see his parents, like his mom's yelling at him. His dad very very quiet.
Right, because the mom pulls out the bottle of liquor that was in the car, and of course the dad is like, "Oh, that's my liquor."
And there is no dialogue. Like we just see James and his dad, they share a look, and his dad is just horrified, and just like the air has gone out of him because he knows that's his bottle and he knows his son was drinking it. But James doesn't say anything, and it is so good.
Oh, it's good.
It's such a well done moment.
His son ain't no rat.
And you know, the mom, of course, has no idea what the full story is. Not that that makes James's behavior more excusable, but. She's like, "Well, how much money have you saved this summer?" And James is like, "Well, about $13,000. And she's like, "Well, that'll go to repairing the car and replacing the bush now." And he's like, "Well, how am I supposed to? That's the money I was going to live on in New York City." And she's like, "Well, that's off the table now."
Yeah. So the whole summer is a wash, pretty much.
And then there's another. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, and also there's another scene where M comes back from quitting her job at Adventureland, and her stepmom and her dad are, like, entertaining company, and she causes, like, a bit of a scene because, like, she really hates the stepmom, and, like, the stepmom and her get into it, and, like, they, you know, words get heated. They had that thing where, like, you have company, and the company kind of tries to play it off, like, you know, a fight isn't just about to break out, but it clearly is.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, they get into some heated language, and, like, M pulls down her wig, which causes, you know, quite the chaos.
Yeah, and shortly after this, after, you know, James has to put all the money he's earned over the summer towards repairing the car and replacing the bush, he finds out that his friend, who went off to Europe in the summer like they planned, his friend has gotten into Harvard, so he's not going with him to New York City. So he doesn't even have a friend who can float him in New York for the first few months, like they planned, like they talked about.
Right. So he is he's pretty much back to square one. He has can't go to New York, has no money. He is just what was this whole summer for?
Yeah. 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 So he goes and he quits from Adventureland himself, and, you know, and Bill Hader's Bobby, he's like, "Oh, we'll see you next summer, right? We'll see you next summer." and James is just like, "Thank you. Thank you."
You know? Yeah. He's like, "It was a very great experience. Thank you so much."
Yeah. Yeah. And he sees Connell kind of holding court elsewhere. He's talking to three girls about he's telling his Lou Reed, jamming it with Lou Reed story. And he's like, "Oh yeah, he played everything. He played this song, he played that song, he played Shine a Light on Love." You know, he played everything. And James goes up to say goodbye to Connell. And, you know, they have kind of a moment. And when James is leaving, he's like, "Hey, by the way, you should know that the name of that song is actually Satellite of Love, not Shine a Light on Love." You know, so, I mean, at this moment, James has realized just kind of how full of shit Connell really is.
Yeah, very much. And they also talk, I think Connell says, "Oh yeah, my wife, Ronnie found out about everything and it was bad." Yeah. But like, I think they're still together. It seems like they're going to write it out, but it seems like Mike isn't really going to change because he's talking to girls and stuff like that. So it's just it's like things are going to go back to the way they were, and that's when
still hitting on the underage girls, and they both are like, hey, have you talked to M? You know, no, not since she quit. No, you know, neither one of them has seen her. But the word is that that M went back to New York.
Right. Like, this movie does a good job of, like, kind of building, like, these people, like, you know, the way everybody in the park kind of put these people on a pedestal. Like, Mike, he's like, oh, he's the amazing, cool guy. Lisa P, oh, she's, like, the hottest thing ever. But then, like, James gets to know both these people, and it's like, oh, wait, you're not really, like, as great as everybody thinks you are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you understand in this movie, everybody's got their feet of clay, everybody's got their problems, and nobody's life is as good or possibly as bad as it looks from the outside, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So so at this point, you know, James has no money, he has no plans about, you know, after college, you know, he doesn't know what he's going to do. He's hanging out with Joel, and, you know, they kind of have a heart-to-heart. And James decides to he's just going to go to New York anyway. He's going to just go and figure it out and, like, go after M because he really, you know, has the feelings for her.
That's what he wants, yeah. So he hears from Joel, M went back to New York, and they have a conversation, you know, about, like, hey, you know, what does it all mean? What does it? And Joel says, like, Herman Melville, he was called Henry Melville in his obituary. You know, so, like, what's the point of anything? And James says, well, you know what? Herman Melville, he wrote a 700-page book about the whaling industry. I think he was a pretty passionate guy. And he says, I hope they call me Henry when I die, too. And I really like this scene. It's such a good scene, man.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. It's like it's very understated, but it has a lot of depth to it.
Yeah, yeah, and James has a little nice moment of triumph because, like, in the background of the scene, we see Frigo running around with what are those things? It's like some sort of fireworks thing.
I think they're like Roman candles, maybe.
Okay, yeah, like Roman candles, and he's like, you know, playing war games basically, yeah. And James leaves and says goodbye to Frigo, and he hits Frigo in the nuts.
Yay!
And Frigo goes down to the crane. Like, he hits him so hard, and he's like, "Ah, that was a good shot. That was a good shot." You know? So it's a nice little. That's a great payoff for that bit.
Absolutely. So So James, always the optimist, always the romantic. He packs up his stuff, says goodbye to his folks. Joel drops him off at the bus station, and he takes a bus to New York, and they never said how he found out where M lives, but he just, you know, it's pouring rain and he's on in front of M's apartment building, you know, very like a very romantic scene, just out in the rain in New York City, waiting for your loved one to come.
Yeah It is a very sweet scene. They kind of come together, they reconcile. M says, like, I'm so sorry for fucking this up. You were the only good thing that happened to me this summer. And, you know, and James apologizes for the scummy things he did. Like, I mean, you know, the whole story about her and Connell got out because of James.
Yeah, that's not great. But, yeah. Like, I think M felt more guilt over what she did because she is like, I should have ended it with Connell, like, as soon as I met you or something like that. But so she carries like a lot of guilt with her, but then James is like, yeah, I don't see you as you see you. Cause like, yes, you did that thing, but you also stood up for Joel when, you know, when Sue said he couldn't see her anymore, you stood up for me when that dude was about to knife me for a panda. Like you have a lot of, you're a good person. You have a lot of good qualities. You just need to recognize that more. You know, you're not a total, you know, horrible person.
Yeah. They both apologize for the fucked up things they did, and they forgive each other. They reconcile. He comes into her apartment because he is soaking wet from the rain. He's like got all his belongings like packed into like one bag, and she's like, "Is there anything in there that you can put on?" And he's like, "No, everything is soaked." So she like gives him a towel. He like takes off his wet shirt. He towels off a little bit, and they come together, they kiss, and and they come together. Like I said, I mean, I don't mean it like that, Darren. It's a very sweet scene.
I know. You know? I'm sorry. I'm a monster.
You are. But I forgive you for that. Like these two forgive each other. And it's just a nice scene where we just see them like starting to get physical, and he just says like, are we doing this? And she says, I think so. And it just closes on a nice two shot of them. It's just such a sweet ending to the movie, man.
Yeah. And that's Adventureland. It's like one of the most underrated, sweetest films like of the aughts, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, of course the ending of this movie, it makes Jesse Eisenberg and Ryan Reynolds wiener cousins.
Wait, what? No.
Well, like when two guys sleep with the same woman, that makes them wiener cousins.
I thought the term was like Eskimo brothers. Wiener? I've never heard that before.
Okay, you know, you could say Eskimo brother too. Sure, I guess. I don't think Eskimo is the most politically correct way to phrase that, but sure.
You know what? I apologize for that. I apologize for all the Eskimos that are listening to this podcast. I was insensitive, and I don't.
And I apologize to all the wieners that are listening to this podcast. We want to be inclusive.
Apologize to Anthony Wiener, Mark Wiener.
Yeah.
All the wieners.
Yeah. All the wieners. All the wieners. All the wieners in Sausage Party. Very sweet ending to the movie. I really like this. I mean, this movie was just such a wonderful, pleasant surprise when I saw it, and it was really fun revisiting this.
Yeah, and like as I said earlier in the movie, a great soundtrack has a lot of songs that, if you're a big fan of like college radio in the 80s, this soundtrack has got just got you know, Replacements, got Husker Du, it's got Big Star, it's got Lou Reed. It's like, I mean, one of my favorite songs, David Bowie, Modern Love. And there's a really nice scene where when it was 4th of July, and like they were all out and fireworks were going off while Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House was playing. And I was like, it's a very nice, beautiful, warm scene.
Yeah. It really does create a real moment there. I mean, it's one of those soundtracks. It is like somebody gave you a cool mixtape, you know, of like, oh, I've never heard this song, but I love this song. Or, oh, I've never put these songs together, but they work really well. And it's that kind of thing.
Very much so. So like, guys, get the soundtrack if you can. Watch this movie if you can. I don't believe it's streaming on Hulu or Netflix, but if you have Stars, you can watch it on Stars.
And apparently it's on Amazon Prime right now, and it is, where else is it? It's on Vudu, and it is on Fandango, so.
Okay, but yeah, so check it out. I can't recommend this movie highly enough. I really dug it.
Yeah, it's really well done. It's a nice, it's a nice little gem of a film, and yeah, and like we said, it compares favorably to Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared and those things, because it's got heart.
Yeah, it does. It's got a lot of heart, got a lot of passions. It's really like, if you're like a person who enjoys kind of like, you know, very romantic movies like this, or very like, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it's a good feeling movie. If you like Freaks and Geeks at all, if you like John Hughes movies at all, you'll like this movie. I'm saying it right here, right now.
Yeah, it's very sweet, and on the trivia, I found this very interesting. Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader, they shot their scenes in a total of 4 days because this was being shot in the winter. It was during the season of SNL, so they had to get back to New York to shoot the show. So everything with Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader, and you see them throughout the movie, and they kind of come and go, but. All that was shot in 4 days. They made the most of their time with those actors.
Yeah, that's impressive too. They're in the movie quite a bit. So like the fact that they got all that stuff out of them is really impressive. And yeah, so they shot this film in Kennywood in Pennsylvania. I think they originally wanted it to shoot it in Greg Mottola's old amusement park where he used to work at out in Long Island, Adventureland. But it looked too modern, so they had to try to find like an amusement park that still had like the old feel, the old rides. And I think they said it was either Rye Playland up in Rye, New York, or Kennywood. because it still has like a lot of vintage feel. So they went with Kennywood. And yeah, they shot it during the off season, like in October and November. You can sort of see it too. Like there's a few scenes where you can see like people's breath as they talk, and you can see like it, wow, it was cold when they shot it, from what I hear.
Yeah. I mean, because like if you're shooting at a, you know, it was a similar thing in I think Wet Hot American Summer. They shot that in an off season, and it was very cold, and you can see the actor's breath in several scenes. And I know it was raining when they were shooting a lot of that movie. Apparently in this movie, there was actually snowfall and they had to, remove snowfall. And it says in some indoor scenes, extras were paid to block the windows and doors so the snowfall wouldn't be visible on camera.
I mean, holy moly.
Yeah.
That's gotta be, and plus like when you're in the summer, you have to be wearing like t-shirts and shorts. So I guess they had to be in that, wardrobe, like in the middle of fall. That can't be comfortable. Yeah.
So, it's an interesting movie. It's an interesting movie. This is also kind of interesting from the IMDb trivia is, it says Twilight director, Catherine Hardwicke flew out to Pittsburgh to meet Kristen Stewart on her day off from filming Adventureland to audition her for the role of Isabella Swan, which she won and accepted. So that's that she actually shot this before any of the Twilight movies. So
I think
that was kind of interesting.
That's it. Okay, because I thought this movie came out after the Twilight movies. Like I thought that
it did, but you know, this was a low budget thing, and you don't always shoot things in the exact order they're released. So,
all right, and that makes sense now because I guess the Twilight came out, and then they figured, oh, we should put this movie out now. We can get some of that Twilight buzz. That sort of, you know, now that Kristen, because like that's when the Twilight came out, Kristen too was kind of everywhere for a little bit. She was like, you know, she was hot.
Yeah, she was like the it girl. I've never watched any of the Twilight movies, but I know Kristen Stewart got like a lot of flack for her performances in that movie, saying that, you know, she was like real wooden as an actress. But I'm never going to be able to totally hate Kristen Stewart just because she made this movie. And I feel like this is such a gem of the film.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, Kristen Stewart's like very divisive. Like a lot of people are like, oh, she's too monotone and she's has no energy, but a lot of people do like her quite a bit. So it's like she's like one of those actresses like you either dig her or you don't. And I mean, this film, I think she works pretty well.
She really works in this movie well. I mean, this movie used her very well.
Absolutely. So and that is Adventureland, guys. Check it out. One of our faves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Fun one to revisit.
And we actually got a tweet about this on the Twitter from at Professor Qbert saying is this the first time you realized Kristen Stewart was actually a great actor? And I mean we kind of touched on that. Like a lot of people feel like she's not a good actor, and she's like we said before, very wooden, but like she does bring some gravitas, as it were, to this film, in this movie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I think she works well in the film. I don't know if I've seen her in enough other things to really say if she is a great actor or not, but I like her in this movie a lot.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So. And that's our talk about a little film called Adventureland. Very, very underrated, but highly appreciated. Guys, check it out.
Yeah. Worth seeing. So what are we doing next week, Darren?
What are we doing next week, you say? What are we doing next week?
You.
Oh, you did. Oh, okay. Yes, you did. Yeah. Well, we're doing a movie that we've actually gotten some requests. This is like a viewer a request. Like we're doing like we're DJs here.
Oh, it's a request like a request. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Did I mention the AC is not on in this room?
Yes.
I'm so hot. So very hot. I mean, some people have requested we do this. So we're doing, out on Netflix, doing a little film called Wine Country.
We talked about doing this one before. It kind of got away from us a bit, but it's got a lot of the female alums from SNL. Amy Poehler, Maya Rudolph.
Rachel Dratch, Anna Gasteyer.
Yeah.
Got Paula Pell. Got Emily Spivey.
I love Paula Pell. I became such a fan of Paula Pell from AP Bio, and it's so nice to see her like getting success as an actor.
Yeah, she's really good cool stuff. Emily Spivey. It's got Tina Fey. It's like a It's like the who's who of SNL alum in this film.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Haven't watched it yet. Looking forward to seeing it. You watched it before, right?
Yeah, I watched it when it came out. I remember liking it quite a bit, so it'll be good to watch it again and revisit it.
Cool, cool. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that for the first time. So, yeah, next week, Wine Country. So, kick back, have a little wine, and watch Wine Country with us. It's streaming on Netflix.
Indubitably. And if you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, you can follow me at Darren Credible. That's D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic.
And yeah, that's we. Oh, and also, what about the Patreon? We got a Patreon. Give us some money. You can give us some.
And you can follow the show page at SNL Nerds Show on Twitter and Instagram.
Oh, right, and we have that.
Yes, yes.
And for the love of Pete, people, give us a review. We're on the Insta, whatever have you. Insta, iTunes. The AC is not on, John. I feel like
my trigger. Yes.
Give us a review on the iTunes or the Apple Tunes or whatever they're calling it. Wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a review. We love reviews. We live off them. They nourish us. We feed off them like a teat on a cow.
Your metaphor game is strong this week, my friend.
Why, thank you.
Yeah. So we like reviews. We please contribute to our Patreon. Please check out the other shows on the Non-Productive Network. And show us a little love. And if you listen to this podcast and enjoy this podcast, please tell a friend about this podcast.
Yeah, let's spread the word. Let's make this thing huge. We want to be bigger than Joe Rogan.
Yes, we do.
Right. It's high. It's lofty goals, but I think we can do it. Spotify will want to pick this up.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anything else, Darren?
No, I'm going to pass out of heat exhaustion in like 2 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to turn my AC on, so we will see you next week, and we will hopefully be cooler and more sane then. But until then, nerds out!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.